I will call the meeting to order. We don't have a quorum yet. What happened? Representative Benson was here, and he's even left. But now we have the vice chair of the committee. So, Representative Slocum, we're going to not be able to move your delete all yet. But why don't you pretend that we did and start?
All right. I want to note that I was here early.
This, for the audience that doesn't come usually, this is a very, very busy time of session, and so it's hard for legislators to get places on time, but we have found if we don't start on time, then we don't get to get in all the people that want to testify. So welcome, Representative Slocum, to the committee that on which you sit, and we'll have you move your bill and your delete all amendment as soon as we can.
Okay. This set up. Madam Chair, members, and other assorted people. This bill solves problems, and the problems it solves involve growing pains for charter schools. I think that a lot of times people are very comfortable with the charter public school movement if the charter public school is in a storefront. And as soon as a school-like building is involved, there's a little discomfort. What this bill does, and there's been some publicity that has not worked in the favor of charter schools that are trying to get a building together. And because of the expansion of charter schools, we're having some growing pains, and this is kind of where this bill comes from, is to address the growing pains and to address the growing need for charter schools to be able to build a building or buy a building. And I think it's a cost-effective way, and I will try to explain that to you via this bill. It's a pretty complex bill. It involves the creation of a new state authority, and the new authority will be able to issue bonds. It's also the result of a number of hearings in the Senate, and the Senate subcommittee, I worked with Senator Saltzman, to put this bill together. I have made some changes in the Senate bill, so it is somewhat different from the Senate bill. Let's see. Do we have a quorum yet? No. Not yet. Okay. This bill creates a charter school facilities authority to issue building bonds under circumstances for qualifying charter school building projects so that a charter can build a building or buy a building. Some of the bill itself just changes language. It removes an affidavit in section one. And it removes the language about cooperatives, because in Minnesota we have no cooperative charter public schools. It clarifies conflict of interest provisions as far as contracting with individuals as well as with persons with for-profit or non-profit entities. So it clarifies and makes more transparent the business dealings itself. It requires a charter school that wishes to issue bonds to have the Department of Education review and comment on any proposed facility projects with a cost in excess of $1.4 million. Leased space. It prohibits a charter school from leasing space from any organization whose purpose is to provide a facility for the charter school. So it again addresses conflict of interest. Allows a school district and charter school. No, we took that out. Never mind. In my amendment. Do we have a quorum yet? Because I really want to go through.
We'll let you know when we have a quorum.
Okay.
Oh, now we do. Okay, then excuse me, Representative Slocum. Representative Benson, do you want to move the minutes of March 4th?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for March 4th.
Representative Benson moves the minutes of March 4th. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Slocum, now you can move your bill first.
Okay. I would like to move House File 3176.
Representative Slocum moves House File 3176 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And your First Amendment.
I would like to move A1 to, no?
DE1.
DE1.
Representative Slocum moves the DE1 amendment, which is, members, a delete all amendment. So we would be working off of that instead of the bill. And that is what Representative Slocum has been
working on,
outlining, and it's the shape that she wishes the bill to be in. Is there any discussion on the delete all amendment? Hearing none, then, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. And then, members, Representative Slocum has another amendment. Representative Garofalo and others, the amendment did not make the deadline. So I would leave it to the committee. It's a lot of it is technical, some of it is not. If you want to put this amendment on or just have her explain it and not vote for it because it did not meet the deadline, and that I would leave to the committee.
Madam Chair, I have no problems with accepting the amendment.
Representative Garofalo has no problem with it. Does anyone? All right. Representative Slocum.
Then I'd like to move that A1.
Representative Slocum moves the A1 amendment to the DE1 amendment that we just adopted. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted, the A1 amendment. So now we have the DE1 amendment as amended by the A1 amendment before us. Representative Slocum was beginning to describe that, and you can continue and conclude, and then we'll have questions from members, and we do have the whole hearing for this. It's a pretty big topic, and we have a lot of people in the audience who are interested, many of whom want to testify. Representative Slocum.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, and thank you for allowing the amendment that gives the House viewpoint. Everything remains the same until you get to page 7. So if you would look on page 7, which is pretty much where this starts. On page 7, line 33, it just cleans up the language to insert contracting after contractor. And on line 34, to strike or and insert entity. Just cleans up language, makes it more clear. On page 8, this line 21, delete or employee, and in line 22, add or delete in conjunction with and insert as a fee for service as part of, and after the period at the end of the sentence, insert, charter school employees may receive remuneration such as a fee for service as part of a financial transaction involving the charter school, only if they are in addition to the services the employee already is providing to the charter school. And this, we wanted to keep this in line with some of the language in how contracting is done. Sometimes someone needs to oversee it, and it may be outside the scope of their job, but we wanted to make I wanted to make sure that this remuneration, it's been a long day, is only if it's outside the scope of a person's workday job, and then in a reasonable way, so that they can coordinate construction or contracting for that particular charter public school. Page 11. At the bottom, well, we deal with, the charter school is eligible to seek endorsement from the charter school's facility. We'll talk about the charter school's facility a little bit later in the bill. Positive review, comment for any project that is in excess of $1.4 million. And the proposal has to be submitted to the commissioner that contains the information required under a section that's coming. And then next change on page 11 is line 26. With deleting which and inserting that doesn't change much. And then I'm deleting lines 29 through 34. And what that eliminates is a bone of contention, because what that particular section of the bill did is if an independent or special school board finds it advantageous to enter into a lease agreement with a charter school, it may request that AYP data be merged. And I thought that might be I thought it would be quite controversial, actually, because I'm not sure how much merged data we want to engage in. I think organizations should stand on their own. Schools should stand on their own. So I moved that section out of the House bill. So it eliminates any merging of data for AYP status. On page 12, then. That's just more of the same about merging data, not merging it. And then on page 12, line 3, becomes B. Page 14 is the net. Let me see if there's anything else that needs explaining there. Eliminating cooperative. There are no cooperative charter public schools in the state of Minnesota, which I found kind of interesting. Okay, on page 14, line 17, this provides for the Department of Administration, in conjunction with the Department of Education, to publish a list of vacant and unused buildings and vacant and unused portions of buildings that are owned by the state or by school districts in the state that might be suitable for the, and in my amendment, I eliminate long-term operation and just use the word operating, because long-term operation is up for interpretation, of a charter school. Just cleaned up the language there. But this allows, this requires the department and the Department of Administration to gather a list of vacant buildings and possible buildings that could be used for charters should they decide to do that. Nothing in this section requires an owner of a building on the list to sell or lease the building or the portion of the building to a charter school or any other prospective buyer, for that matter. It just requires that a list be made so that available buildings are published and can be considered. Okay. Okay, on page 14, after line 30, in the House bill, I've inserted a charter public school may use total operating capital revenue for any purpose related to the school unless the charter school has been endorsed under the section where the authority endorses the charter school for the purposes of building. And then a charter school, it also adds a section B that says a charter school that has been endorsed under the section must reserve at least $100 per pupil of its annual operating capital revenue for capital repairs and replacement. So it maintains a reserve fund for capital repairs. All right. on page 15. On page 15 of the DE1, on 15.9, it sets up criteria that the or information that the commissioner may request of the charter public school in order to implement the possibility of building and using this situation. Okay. This is difficult to go from these two documents. Bear with me. I'm sorry. It's hard. And I'm sure you're finding it hard going back and forth also.
And Representative Slocum, if you want to just give us the highlights, too, I think I could.
That's what I'm trying to do, the stuff that I've changed, unfortunately.
But since we didn't know what was in the first bill or the amendment versus the, you know, delete all amendment, I think if you just took it as if, as amended was how you introduced it and hit the high points, you could do that as well.
Okay. Okay. I will try that tactic. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Line 15, 36. Page 15, 36, line 36, a charter school that received more than $1,200 per pupil unit in lease aid for fiscal year 2010 must continue to receive that per pupil aid amount until the latter date, latter of June 30th, 2012, or the bonds supporting the charter school facility become callable, and that's if they are indeed building. And that cleaned up some of that language. Okay. I'm going to call help. I'm going to phone a friend. Come help me.
Mr. Piccolo, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Facilities aid here. Yep, that would be it.
Madam Chair, members, section...
And Mr. Piccolo, if you could identify yourself for the...
My name is Eugene Piccolo. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. On page 15, line 36, what the amendment would do is there are schools that are still receiving $1,500 for schools for lease aid that were grandfathered in 2003. This provision provides a transition period for that aid to be brought in line with the all the other schools that get $1,200. By those who have current affiliated billing companies, they would get that until their bonds are come call due, which is a part of the bill. And then other schools that are leasing from regular landlords would receive 2 years to transition and renegotiate their leases with current, with their current landlord to a lower cost.
And then Mr. Piccolo, excuse me just a minute, Mr. Strom, is that related then to this handout that we have, this section?
Madam Chair, yes. I was asked to put a list together to show the charter school lease aid amounts, and they're sorted from most to least. And as Mr. Piccolo said, there's 23 charter schools that are currently over the $1,200 per pupil, and I believe about two dozen of them have bonds outstanding on facilities that they're in.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. So members, we do have, if we want to see which charter schools are affected and how by this section, we have the handout in your packets that Mr. Strom prepared. So thank you. Please proceed.
The next page. On page 16, it sets up the formula for how much facilities aid for those schools that own a building or purchase a building or construct a building, how much aid they would get. And there's an amendment to that in the piece on line 1610. And then on if you go to subdivision, section 12, this creates a credit enhancement account where schools that are have done bonding through the bonding authority would put 6% aside as a credit enhancement, so that there, if there is default on a payment, the credit enhancement account would be used to make that payment.
And actually, this is probably
Representative Holcomb?
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair. This is the, I think, probably the most creative part of the bill, in that it provides for backup for the bonds. Currently, we have some issues with bonding because there's nothing backing up these bonds. So the charter public schools end up paying higher interest rates, and from the lease payments, they're paying some of their bond payments and their property payments. And this would allow each charter school who's building to put 6% away, and then they would have a fund to guarantee their bonds, therefore getting a lower interest rate, more cost-effective for taxpayers' dollars.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, members, this section also allows the authority to raise money through grants and other sources that could also be used to put in the account for credit enhancement. So if there's private funding that somebody wanted to give, that could also help lower the interest rates, because there's more in the credit enhancement, or the basically insurance fund, for this payment. Section 13 says that any sale or transfer of assets, because once the schools own the building, they become an asset of the school, would have to be approved by the commissioner, because it's public property then. Section 14 creates a building lease transition aid program for the years 2011 through 2017. And this is for schools that currently have affiliated building companies for the period of time in which their bonds would be paid off, because most bonds have an 8-year period before the call date, and there's a prepay penalty if you pay off the bonds before the first 8 years. So you will find in the bill there's actually a listing of schools and what year their bonds are paid off, and they would be paid off, and then new bonds would be issued under the authority. And this provides aid for those schools during that transition time.
Very good. And members, this is a complicated bill, so we will take questions as we go through. Representative Davenny has one now. And it's my intention to be done presenting the bill and having member questions by 3:30, because there's a lot of testimony. There is not agreement on this bill. And Representative Mariani on the list as well. And so I want to make sure that we get to hear from people. So 3:30 is the time I want to finish up with the presentation and the member questions. Representative Davenny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be brief. This is a question, I think, more for staff than it is for either the author or the testifier. Section 13 just provokes the question of what are the structures on how a school could use the revenues generated from the sale of assets, a building in this case.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Davenny, presuming that the facility has been fully repaid, essentially there's a qualification requirement that that sale be approved by the the endorsing authority if they've had outstanding bonds. If not, then it's up to the commissioner to approve that, and if the commissioner did, they essentially could use that revenue in any way they saw fit.
Thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Slocum and Mr. Piccolo. A couple of questions I may have more a little bit later on. What I'm trying to do is just kind of tease out some policy possible questions here, because we haven't heard this in policy committee, and I'm not hankering to do so, but I just want to be able to quickly ask. So on section 6 on page 11, that says an independent or special school board that enters into a lease agreement may request the Department of Ed to count the charter school student data as part of the school district data for the purposes of determining AYP.
And Representative Mariani, that section's been deleted by the amendment
That's what I get for coming in late. Thank you, Madam Chair. Then I will not ask that question. Then let me ask the next question. That's on section, let's see, Madam Chair, section 7 and 8. That's still before us?
Yes, Representative Mariani.
Thank you.
Go for it.
So this is where we're going to remove the ability of charter schools to be formed as a cooperative instead of as a nonprofit corporation. I know nothing about this. I just want to make sure that...
Excuse me, Representative Mariani. Representative Slocum clarified there are no cooperatives in Minnesota, so that was useless language.
This is Madam Chair, this is language that no one's availed themselves of in terms of forming charter schools.
Exactly.
This is wonderful.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'll keep reading through the bill, but hopefully it'll go as smoothly as these last two questions.
Representative Slocum must have been reading your mind with her amendment. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Page 16, lines 32 and 33, where it talks about charter school facilities credit enhancement account may receive grants or gifts. For the sake of transparency, is there a requirement to indicate or make public where those gifts come from?
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative, since it would go into the special revenue account in the state treasury, I assume that this, all accounts in the state treasury are public.
Okay. Representative Marquardt?
No, that's good, as long as there's transparency there. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions, and this might be for Mr. Strom. I'm a follow-up to Representative Dabney's question on page 17, the sale or transfer of assets under subdivision 4C. It says the commissioner must approve the sale or transfer. It says she must approve it, or he or she must approve it, first of all. And for the purpose of what? I'm not. Is there something else in statute, or is there some other things that we do normally? It says the charter school must notify the commissioner if they intend to sell property financed, and it says the commissioner must approve the sale. So what's the purpose? Or what are we doing there, I guess,
Mr.
is my
Piccolo.
Question.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I think the second line is really should be referenced to the fact that there would be a transfer of the property from the affiliated building company directly to the charter school. So that language probably needs to be addressed there.
Representative Demmer.
I'm not sure I quite understood that. According, the way I'm reading this, it says a charter school board must notify the commissioner if the board intends to sell or transfer property financed by the lease transition aid. And then it says the commissioner must approve the sale. Now, I don't know, does that mean must okay the sale, or is it saying the commissioner has to give approval to it? I don't know what the basis of the approval is. I'm not sure what we're doing here. I guess that's my question.
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I guess there's two pieces in here. One is that there would be a transfer of property from the current affiliated building company to this actual charter school under this law, because affiliated building companies would disappear over a period of transition. So that piece would be required to be approved by the commissioner so that the school actually owns the building. I think there probably needs to be some clarifying language if they sell it to some other party other than the charter school directly.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm still misunderstanding. It says the school board is selling it or transferring it. Is why I'm reading it. It says I'm assuming here that the school board, the charter school, already owns the property, and now they're intending to either sell it or transfer it to someone else, and that the commissioner must approve that. Am I missing something?
Mr. Piccolo.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I do think it should probably state that the charter school board or the current affiliated board selling the property, because this piece really applies to both once the school owns it and also the current affiliated building company selling it to the school. So, Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, I would suggest that this piece needs to be reworked a little.
Okay, I guess
to clarify the questions that you've raised.
Okay, if I could, Madam Chair. I'll take that as an open.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You have free rein until I butt in.
I guess I would agree, I guess, with sounds need to change. The other question I would have is, must approve it based on what? Is there a criteria already in place someplace that the commissioner has to use? Does he or she have some set of criteria that they're supposed to use when they're approving it based on how the proceeds will be used or based on whether it's an adequate amount, or must approve it based on what? And I'm not sure if there's someplace in statute already or if that commissioner would know, or if that needs to be also clarified as to say what are the parameters around which I must approve it. In other words, what makes it good or bad, what makes me approve it or not approve it.
Mr. Piccolo.
I'm going back here. Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, Subdivision 4 references back to, I believe, the charter contract and the provisions in there. So, I think this section needs to be reworked a little. So I would recommend that be included in your questions.
Representative Demmer.
Okay, well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just assume that that's going to be redone, and I'll leave it alone for now. And I do have one more question.
Representative Demmer.
From a broad-based perspective, and just looking back through some of the language, it appears, it just struck me when it said that we're not allowed to use, in other words, somebody is not allowed to lease a building to a charter school if the charter school's lease aid is what they're depending on for the lease payments, for their income. And that, unless we're just simply not going to allow anybody to lease to a charter school, it seems odd, because if I owned a building, unless I owned it free and clear and didn't have any payments, of course I'd be relying on the lease from the charter school to make my payments on it. And this says you can't do that. How would I ever lease a building to a charter school? Do you understand my question?
Mr. Piccolo.
I'll field this one.
Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think there's a misunderstanding here. A property owner can't lease to a charter public school if the intention of that owner is for that charter public school to buy that building, so that ultimately they're going to be in a purchase agreement. And I'm right, aren't I here?
Mr. Piccolo?
I'm on thin ground, so.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Piccolo.
I think there's a couple things. One is there's the proposal is trying to clarify that affiliated building companies would be eliminated going forward, so that you could not create a building a company just to lease to a charter school for that purpose. There has been some clarification in one of the amendments languages to clarify about a private owner who builds a building and so forth to lease to a charter school. And yes, you would be right if the current interpretation of that, but that's why there's been an amendment in that language. But this is to clarify that building companies going forward would be eliminated and that the schools would own buildings directly if they moved into this route. Madam Chair, if I can go back to Representative Demmer's previous question. In reference to Subdivision 4D in the sale of transfer of assets, if you go down on line 1713, that is the criteria for which the commissioner has to use down below. It's the same criteria for receiving transition aid that's referenced in 4D.
Okay, we have two more questions, Representative Mariani and Representative Van Zels, and then I'm going to hold questions so you can finish as quick as possible, looking at 3:30 as our target with presenting the bill. Then we'll have final questions from members before we have testimony. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is three questions. I think they are related in Section 17 on pages 20 and 21. And again, Madam Chair, I'm just trying to vet out some of the finer policy issues. So on the top of page 21, we've got the authority that's been established shall determine which charter schools are in a financial and academic position to develop a facility. I'm wondering what is that academic position? Is that a reference to lines 213 through, or rather lines 13 and 15 further on the page?
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, 2113 to 2115, is that what you're talking about? Yes.
Madam Chair, and Mr. Piccolo, the first part of the question is the language academic position on line 1 at the top of the page. I'm assuming that that refers to lines 13 to 15, but I just want to know whether it does that or if there's something else that's meant by academic position.
Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, yes, that is what it's referenced to.
And then, Madam Chair and Mr. Piccolo, so then on lines 13 through 15, we have a statement from the Department of Ed that a satisfactory percentage of students, it sounds pretty imprecise to me, and so if you can expound on that. And then similarly on line 14, are making high growth on statewide tests. I'm not sure what high growth means, and so if you can kind of let us know what the intent is in regards to satisfactory percentage and high growth.
Mr. Piccolo, or Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, we had talked last Friday, it could be, the days are starting to mush together, but about this particular part in the bill. And high growth was to be crossed out, making growth, because what's the determiner here? Because we felt there was a lack of clarity here. This is really, this is, we're still in process here with this. So.
Well, Madam Chair, Dr. Slocum, I'd be glad to work with you on both of these qualifiers here. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably wise to eliminate this issue of high growth, and you're obviously tying this to statewide tests under 120B.299. I think that's appropriate. We should also, I think, think through what satisfactory percentage, what's a more, clear direction to the department in regards to that. But I'd be glad to work with you and Mr. Piccolo as we move forward with this.
And Representative Mariani, obviously the Finance Committee sent this bill directly here, but I think you're raising very good points that there are policy implications in this bill. And so we'll take your direction on whatever you want to do to hammer those out.
Thank you.
So, thank you,
Madam Chair.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions have to do with sections 20 and 21, and my question is, well, first of all, as we know, there are public districts that fall into statutory operating debt, and in some cases for a long time. And try as I have, there appears to be no remedy other than local management practices and other things at the district level to get out of statutory operating debt. In the case of charter schools, however, once you're called an endorsed school and have your loan, when and if you default, in the case of the charter school, the state's taxpayers are required to backfill the default on the loan. Is that accurate or not? And if so, why?
Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzels, no, that's not accurate. That's why we have the Credit Enhancement Fund to, if a charter public school can't make their payments, has an issue with payback, that's where the money comes from.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm.
Representative Anzels, apparently Mr. Piccolo, do you want to hear from Mr. Piccolo
sure,
first? Mr.
Sure.
Piccolo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzels, one of the things is if you look on page, where is it? there, On page 2319, they are revenue bonds that are issued. They are not, and as you see on page, where is it now? Page 24.8, the bonds issued under this section are not general obligation bonds of the state or the authority. The full faith and credit taxing powers of state and authority are not, and they may not be pledged for the payment of bonds. So basically, these are revenue bonds. If a school defaults, the credit enhancement account goes first. If the school goes out of business, then the asset would have to be sold, and any proceeds that are still left, any profit of those bonds would come back to the state treasury, like all other assets of a charter school when they close.
Madam.
And Representative Van Zyl.
Madam Chair, thank you for that. I'm just concerned that the state's taxpayers are dealt an even hand here in dealing with charter schools and public schools.
Thank you. All right. I guess we've got 3 minutes left. No, we'll give you, how about 10 more minutes to finish up? We won't take any more questions, but at the when it gets to be 10 minutes, then we'll go to testimony. Mr. Piccolo.
Let's see, where were we?
Where were we?
I think we were on section 17. The actual authority, it would be made up of 8 members, 5 appointed by the governor with advice and consent of the Senate. And then the School Boards Association would have a non-voting member on there. The terms and so forth are similar to other authorities, and actually, this is modeled somewhat after the Higher Education Facilities Authority and how it would operate. If you go to page 21, the requirements of what a school would have to meet to seek bonding authority under this. There's the language in this section under subdivision 5. It is similar to what was put into the law last year for affiliated billing companies. The changes in here are the one area that Representative Mariani already referenced, and also the reference to projects in excess of $1.4 million have to go for comment or review. That is a new piece also. Otherwise, the criteria are already in current law for affiliated billing companies. And that continues on page 22. For those schools that would like to construct buildings. Then subdivision 6 on page 22 would give the authority to ask more information if they so choose, and sets the authority as permanent. It's a permanent authority that exists. Section 18 then provides the process for how the authority shall prove the bonds and so forth, and what endorsed school is. Basically, it's a school, according to definition, that has been approved by the authority to purchase and renovate or construct the building. Section 19 gives the authority of the charter school board to enter into an agreement with the authority for the bonding finances by two-thirds majority vote. Section 20 provides for the facilities authority to issue bonds as if they were a municipality, and as I already mentioned, their revenue bonds and the full faith and credit is of the state is not used in those. Page 24, subdivision 2, lines 24-13, that the issuance of bonds authority must comply with federal laws and regulations concerning exemption from interest on the bonds and federal income tax. Section 21 talks about state payment of endorsed debt obligation upon default. So the state would have the power to pay the default payment out of the credit enhancement account, and then to go back to the school and seek the money for that default payment. So there could be an aid reduction eventually from the school for that payment back to the credit enhancement account. Section on page 26, subdivision 5, would require mandatory technical assistance plan if a school goes into default on their payments for the principal or the interest, and the Department of Education would have to assist them in preparing that plan. Subdivision 6 says the Commissioner of Management Budget in issuing warrants to pay those defaults, if that would adversely affect the credit of the state, they don't have to issue the warrants for payment at that point. And then it provides authority in Subdivision 6 for the Commissioner of Management Budget to enter into agreements with the other departments that would be dealt with in this process. Subdivision Section 22 defines a public building as being a public school building project rather than just district project. And then Section 23 lists some of the schools, not all the schools are here yet. We are working on that with the department to make sure all the schools, because there are about 23 schools that currently have affiliated building companies and bonds, and what year they would transition under the law.
Okay, and that concludes. Very good. You finished up in less than 10 minutes. Okay, we'll take the testimony from two people who have signed up, and then we'll go back to member questions, and then we'll ask if there's anyone else who wants to testify. And the two people that signed up ahead are Scott Kroonquist and Lisa Irwin. So, Mr. Kroonquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I'd like to start by commending, you know, Representative Slocum. She's done a lot of work on the charter school issue last year and this year. I think brought about a lot of needed reform last year. And again, we think that the bill that's before you has a lot of needed reform. I think that was evident in the Star Tribune series that I'm sure most of you read, showed that we have a lot of challenges and a lot of problems with the current system. That said, we do have some concerns. I want to raise two. The first one is, I don't think there's anything in the current bill that would provide an ongoing ability for the charter school to take care of the facility. We all know that when you own a building, whether it's a home or an office building, they're very expensive. And so I think you're going to, in the future at least, would have to look at deferred maintenance, health and safety, Safe Schools Levy, you know, all the things that you deal with and you hear from the traditional school districts are going to have to be addressed in some way, shape, or form. And so I think you probably want to get a good handle on what a fiscal note might look like going forward in needing to address those kind of issues.
So, Mr. Kroonquist, it seems to me I saw here somewhere that there was $6 held back from the lease aid to the charter school bus reserve, or $100, I guess. It's annual operating capital revenue for capital repairs and replacement. Right. So your concern is despite that amendment?
Yeah, correct, Madam Chair. I mean, okay. Your traditional school districts receive operating capital, and they certainly find that that is not anywhere near sufficient to maintain their buildings and address deferred maintenance needs.
Okay, thank you.
And then the other issue, Madam Chair, members, is just the fact that you would be creating a two-tiered system here for your public school districts in Minnesota. Your traditional districts, as you all, I think all know, need to go to the voters and get an approval, have a bond referendum, get an approval to move forward with building a building, or if it's a major deferred maintenance issue. Those are tough to pass. We've had occurrences over the last few years where we've had a school district succeed, get a bond referendum passed, then discover that they actually needed to try to pass an operating referendum in order to open the school, and the operating referendum then failed. And you've had a brand new school building just sitting dormant because they couldn't pass the operating referendum. We've got other districts that are struggling mightily right now with trying to figure out how to renovate or remodel existing buildings. And again, their only option is to move forward or to go to the voters and pass a bond referendum. So this would set up a system where the charter schools would have the ability to go to an appointed authority. And I do emphasize the word appointed, not an elected body, an appointed charter school authority that would have the ability to approve the issuance of these revenue bonds. So we do have a concern about this uneven playing field that would be set up. That's all I have, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Kronquist? Okay, thank you very much. Lisa Irwin. Welcome, and please state your name and who you're representing for the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lisa Irwin. I'm the president of the board for the Coalition for Charter School Management. I'd like to thank you all for all of the hard work that you do supporting education in Minnesota and for taking the time to hear me speak today. I have been involved in the charter school community for almost 15 years now. My son is actually sitting in the room behind me. He's a senior at Art Tech Charter School. He's been in charter school since kindergarten and will be graduating this year, and I'm delighted about that.
And Ms. Irwin, like a lot of sons, he did not raise his hand. Could we ask him to? Which one is the son? All right. Thank you.
I also have an eighth grader who is also at Art Tech Charter School in Northfield, Minnesota, who's not here today. I've helped start a couple of charter schools. I served as a director of a charter school in Northfield, Art Tech, actually, which I helped start. I've served on the board for the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools several years ago, and helped start the company called School Business Solutions, which provides technical support services to charter schools in Minnesota. So with that background, I'd like to talk a little bit about this bill. I'm delighted to see that we might have an opportunity for charter schools to use public funds to purchase facilities. I am concerned about a number of provisions in this bill that might have unintended consequences. And we are, the charter school community, or some of us in the community, are still reeling a bit from the interpretation of last year's legislation, which we fully supported, and then we watched the Department of Ed come out with a 32-page document of, here's the answers to your questions, and oh, by the way, it's not what you thought it was. And this year, looking ahead, thinking this is a very complex change to the charter school bill, the charter school law. And that as we move forward, we need to be very conscientious about how someone else might interpret some of those changes. And I just have to applaud Representative Slocum for all of the work that she's done in already having an amendment to fix some of the concerns that we have. And I know that she has offered to meet with some members of the committee, of the community moving forward to work through some other issues. Particularly, there's a review and comment provision in this bill that seems to make perfect sense, and yet the cost of the review and comment provision for a charter school is quite extensive, and at this time there'd be no way for a charter school to fund that review and comment process with the Department of Education. There's also some concern about landlords needing to provide what they might consider to be proprietary data, their financial statements if they're a for-profit company, in order to lease a facility to a charter school. And while it's hard enough to find a facility that is qualified under E1 building code, I'd hate to see the number of buildings available reduced simply because landlords were nervous about renting to a school. We're also concerned, I'm concerned, about the transition from building companies to the facility's ownership. I think that it's a great idea to have that process in place, and I hope that we can find a way to make sure that charter schools aren't having unnecessary costs in that process. I know there's one lawyer who has also expressed a concern that these bond issuances for building companies are legal documents between the school and the building company, and that we should be aware of what implications those might have as we move forward. Also very concerned about the requirement for a school to have a satisfactory percentage of growth. I would hate to see anybody interpret that to mean that schools who have a high mobility rate or who might be serving at-risk kids might not have the ability to have a space for their students. And I know that that's certainly not the intention, but we worry about the interpretation of things like that. Make sure I have all my notes here. There's so much to this bill. I just hope that we can all work together to make sure that these pieces of legislation that are, again, I really think the intent is fantastic, and I really hope we can find a way to make this work, but just that we're very cautious in how we move forward, that nobody has an unintended consequence with the Department of Education or any other entity.
Questions for Ms. Irwin? I would ask one unrelated to this bill, so I guess we don't need to go on about it a long time, but what were two or three of the interpretations by the department that you didn't believe were the legislative intent from last year?
Thank you for the opportunity to address that, Madam Chair. First of all, is the authorization of the certification of authorizers. Fabulous to add accountability to our authorizers. Fabulous idea. The Department of Education, in its first interpretation of the bill, said that any charter school that was up for renewal at the end of this year would not have the ability to have an authorizer unless that authorizer was already certified. The initial interpretation, again, they have now changed their stance and given schools an additional year, but I'm quite sure that nobody intended for charter schools to simply cease to exist on June 30th, 2010 because their authorizer had not started the certification process. There is still an issue right now with schools who whose authorizers are not intending to become certified, or with the Department of Education as the authorizer, who don't have a certified authorizer that they can now go to because nobody is yet certified. And the Department of Education has issued the RFP process, but they are not intending to have final comment on this or final answers until potentially June 21st. So a school that is up for renewal on June 30th, 2010 could still have a problem. So that's just one of the issues.
Thank you.
Yes.
All right. I don't see anyone on the list for questions, so thank you very much. And I would ask, could you raise your hand in the audience if you would like to testify? Mr. Piccolo, anyone else? Mr. Piccolo.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify a little. My previous role here at the table was to help explain the bill, so I do want to have the opportunity to share a few thoughts. There was one question about by Mr. Kroonquist about the continued support of a facility, and in the amendment that Representative Slocum presented and was approved on lines 213 to 214, the Joris Charter School that has satisfied all loan payments is eligible for annual facilities aid equal to $600 times its pupil units. So basically it would be half of what current lease aid is for schools that have paid off their bonds. Just want to say that in terms of last year's law, we really want to thank the legislature for the work you did. Recently, that our Minnesota charter school law was recognized as the best charter school law in the United States against the model law that has been created for all 40 states and the District of Columbia that have charter schools now. So we are very proud of the work that you did to help move Minnesota back into the position of the best public policy law in the United States on charters. As was mentioned, one of the things that that bill did was to finally address the issue that had been an issue for the last 19 years about what to do about facilities for charter schools. And as you know, back in 2003 and in 2008, the legislative auditor urged the legislature to begin to address the issue. And we thank you for recognizing the reality of what has occurred over time by recognizing affiliated building companies and then establishing some criteria for those building companies in terms of their operation and their governance and so forth. In terms of the framework of this particular bill, we strongly support the concept behind it to change public policy to allow charter schools to own buildings with public funds, which is now currently banned under current law. That's why we have the development of these affiliate building companies occurred over the last dozen years or so. And so in terms of the bill itself, there's been some mention of things that are concerned to others, and we would echo those and have been working with the author, Representative Slocum, and also with Senator Saltzman in the Senate to address a number of issues regarding this bill and how it's been laid out. And so I'm not going to take a lot of time to rehash those, but just to say that I think the amendments that Representative Slocum presented today with the delete all. In addition to that, have taken this about three generations of drafts forward, and we continue to work with both the House and the Senate to try to address all the other issues that there are before us. So thank you.
Thank you very much. And members, a fiscal notice requested for this bill. Mr. Fernquist said he definitely thought we should get one, and we definitely have asked for one. We don't have it yet, but that'll be a big criteria in our evaluation of the bill, I'm sure. Are there any more questions, members? I kind of rushed us through thinking we had more testifiers, and we don't, apparently. Representative Mariani.
As long as you're shopping around for questions.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, just on that fiscal note issue very quickly. So on the on page 20, we've got the facilities authority. And on line 30, we have reference to the terms, compensation, removal, et cetera, to section 15.0575. And I used to know this, but I forget every year, and then I relearn it. Is that the provision that says that those terms are meant to serve without compensation? Those members, rather, are meant to serve without compensation?
Mr. Strom or Mr. Crowe, they're looking. And thank you, Representative Mariani, because if they're supposed to serve with compensation, that would add to the fiscal note. So. Yes.
We back.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone else who wants to testify? Otherwise, Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to respond for a second. Ms. Irwin brought up landlords' propriety data, additional landlord propriety data, and that was supposed to be out in my amendment. So that would be one issue that she's got with the bill that we've, I believe, taken care of. And I need to go through the bill again to make sure it's been taken care of. I think it is a work in progress. It's been a work in progress for a number of months now. Senator Saltzman held hearings that Representative Newton went to all fall. And this represents quite a bit of work to make things more clear, make things more transparent, and make things more cost effective, not only for charter public schools, but also for the taxpayers. And it really allows more bang for the buck, if you will. And I think it's pretty good. It's at least a very good start.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. And I think we have one more testifier now that we have the time. Am I right? Mr. Schneiderwin? And did the other gentleman back there, are you trying to testify? I thought I saw it. No, okay, just Mr. Schneiderwin. Okay, welcome.
Madam Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we've been working with the authors more on the Senate side than over here. So we appreciate the effort that Representative Slocum has put into this, and I just want to echo the concerns that Mr. Kroonquist talked about, is the equity issue for school districts and many of the unmet needs that school districts presently have in their facility needs as well. School boards, as you know, when they have to go out and ask for a bond referendum to build a new building, to operate a new building, sink their heart and soul into that effort. And many times they are not successful. And so I think that the part that needs to be asked as you go forward with this issue is how are we handling this equity issue when it appears that there will be state aid here for the charter schools versus the effort at the local school district level that needs to be passed in order to provide for that funding. And I think the other issue that I want to bring up is that prior to my time, I think the discussion was had around charter schools about the fact that they were supposed to be different, that we were going to create these incubators of great instructional strategies that they were going to share with other school districts, and we were all going to grow from the effort. And I think that what we're creating here, it appears to us in a way, is that we're creating a two-level system here in terms of the financing of public schools. And I think that that needs to be thought about or thought through as we move forward here. And I think, you know, there's some other technical issues in here about bond sales and requirements around the financing that Mr. Deans is here, that if you have any questions about those, we would certainly entertain those.
Thank you very much. Members, any questions for Mr. Schneiderwin or Mr. Deans? Thank you very much. Last call for testifiers. Representative Slocum has given her closing statement. Any questions from members? Hearing none, thank you, Representative Slocum. And House File 1376, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was hoping there's a lot of discussion in the hallways and chatter and rumors. To the degree that you're allowed to share with us, can you map out for us what the how the finance things are going to be working for the bills, and specifically how K-12 is going to work out? Again, to the degree that you can share that, I would appreciate it.
I Representative Garofalo, I'm glad you asked. I'm sure there's people interested and members of the committee as well. And so I would have talked with you soon, but now that this is even better to ask here. So it's our intention to mark up the bill on March 26th. We don't have to have it out until the 29th, but we're working a little ahead of the game in case we run into problems and we still have the 29th. So we would go through the bill in the public committee on the 24th. Isn't Friday the 25th? Okay, thank you. So I'm one day off. It's the 26th that we mark up the bill. So we go through in the committee the proposal on the 25th. And when would we be getting it to the minority party? Do you have any idea?
Madam Chair, I think under the schedule we discussed, depending on how things went with the assembly, we'd be looking at the at the end of the day on the 23rd.
Okay.
That would on the 24th, starting on the 24th, that we'd get copies to people for the hearing on the 25th and the markup on the 26th.
Okay. So did that answer your question?
Partially. And Madam Chair, thank you. And I meant no disrespect by asking these questions publicly. We're hearing that there's going to be sort of an omnibus bill, and then K-12 is going to be, might be separate. We are going to be separate. And Madam Chair, do you know what provisions are going to be in the omnibus bill, or which ones are going to be? I'm asking questions because I really honestly don't know.
Right. Well, we are all, I miss caucus on Monday, so I'm probably the last one to ask as well. But as near as we can tell, and everything seems to be a work in progress, there will be the education bill will be last. Prior to that will be health and human services, and then there will be the other bill before that, and that's as much as I know, and I keep being told everything is a work in progress.
Okay. And Madam Chair, just one last question. Do we have an approximate time about when we're going to know what our target is for this committee?
The caucus has tentatively given out targets to our to the majority party caucus, and I think there's still the possibility of caucus discussions changing things, and so they haven't yet released the targets. Maybe if you listen carefully in the hallway, you know what they are. But I haven't been given the leeway to announce them all. I myself know what ours is. I know what Health and Human Services is, but no one has told us in our caucus even yet what the Health and Human Services target is. So you have to ask members of that committee, ask members of this committee, you'll get the full picture, but sure. I think our leadership wants to announce it first,
sure.
And so I'm trying to, I'm not always a good follower of everything, right. But in this case, I'm honoring that.
So, Madam Chair, it sounds like I'm going to have to take a couple majority party members out for drinks and dinner one of these nights to find out the answer. So.
That's a graph of that. I think Representative Morgan is volunteering.
Madam Chair, I appreciate you sharing with me what you can, so thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure with you, Representative Garofalo. And if there are no further questions, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.